The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot, bang! Oh, done!
Oh, it's great to be with you. Sorry for the long wait for this episode. It is Monday, September 5th, 2022, Labor Day here in the United States of America, if not worldwide. No, I guess it's not worldwide. Sound very ignorant off the top of the show today. It's episode 364 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. It's good to see you, my man. I'm out here on the West Coast, so this is sort of a primetime episode for you, 7.09 p.m. Eastern on a Monday night, kid.
Yeah, but it's all good. It's all good. I got dinner in me. I'm a happy boy now.
Good,
and it's good to see you too, man. You were at Stan's wedding, which was very cool.
I was at Brian Stan's wedding in Los Angeles, the greater Southern California area last night. That is one beautiful state. So, no, it was absolutely great to see him in his element and see how happy he was. And I have to say, you know, as someone who came from, I don't know if I, a broken family, right? But my family did break apart. But seeing them together, Brian Stan and his second wife, Michelle, who's incredible, almost as incredible, maybe as incredible as him, but five daughters combined, and seeing these five girls together, water works for me. You know, like when Stan was doing his vows and he turns to his stepdaughters, like me and Jay Glazer just start bawling. I'm legit bawling, like legit tears coming down my sunglasses. Hot as hell in there, out there, I should say, but beautiful backdrop, really happy for Brian Stan. Speaking of, vows, you know, my wife had said a couple days before the wedding, like, oh, you know, maybe we should have a party, just like 100 people or, you know, do like vow renewals at some point in time.
Yeah.
And, I don't want to do that. You know, I mean, I don't want to be the center of attention any more than I have to. Like at my wedding, I didn't want to grab a microphone or Ken Flo was there dressed to the fucking nines.
I was.
No socks with dress shoes, probably. So now it seems like that's the look, right? Is, you know, no socks or just ankle socks with dress shoes.
Yeah.
You know, my ankles are pretty nice, I guess. So I think maybe I should start to move in that direction. But Ken Flo was doing that in fucking 2010 at my wedding in Weston, Massachusetts.
Way ahead of everybody. Hey, dude. So listen, what's the year? Like, is there a year, like amount of years when you renew? Or is this kind of like, oh, well, we'll renew because.
Right. Chrissy. Like how many years?
No, I'm curious. You
know? Yeah, exactly. Great.
No, Chrissy,
point.
I'm with you.
But I will
I got your back.
Well, I will say that after going through a wedding at our advanced ages, my wife at the end of the whole thing was like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want to party anymore, which is kind of nice. She doesn't want to do it actually anymore, at least for now. But Cody has chased that information. He says vow renewals are often conducted at intervals of 2, 5, 10, 25, or 50.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you renewing your vows after 2 years, folks? I mean, advice to young married couples, I would not do it at 2 years. I'd fucking wait. I don't even think
well, what has to go wrong for that to happen, right? Like,
John's
not organic.
John's doing something right, though, right? Because he had one wife. He's with her the whole time. You know, he went to Stan's second wedding. He went to my second wedding. Yeah.
That's
so
right.
If you're having a second wife, if you're friends with Anik, invite him. He'll be there. I think it's
I'll
good
be there.
Luck.
No matter what. That's a good point. Yeah. So far, so good. We got one wife so far. but yeah, I mean, I barely knew my wife when we got married. Never mind after 2 years of dating. I know who she is now and we are still together. So real quick, I just thought this was sort of a funny story. So I don't drink that much, you know, prefer maybe some other recreational drugs here and there, but I don't drink that much. So casino cruise the night before, and it's like pretend money, but basically whoever wins gets whoever has the most money. There were two prizes, grand prize on the casino cruise the night before Stan's wedding, you know, Oculus, right? The virtual reality thing and an iPad, all sorts of electronics that my children would absolutely love, right? So I'm a couple tequilas in, a little bit buckled, playing roulette. And I think I'm playing with $5 chips. And again, it's pretend money, right? It's great for me to play with pretend money instead of losing my shirt the night before the wedding. So I think I'm playing with $5 chips and I start putting them on numbers as I often do. I play a corner of the wheel and the dealer, the woman says, you know, can you just do one on each number instead of two chips? And I'm thinking, well, we're scaling back the stakes here. Little did I know that I was putting $500 chips on every number because, you know, they gave you $1,000. I got it up to like $5,000 or $7,000, whatever. Long story short, I had a $500 chip that I thought was a $5 chip on red 23, my son's birthday. So, you know, I end up with like $18,000 in chips or whatever. So the one thing they told us not to do was give the chips to the kids. But it's like all these cute little girls. I'm missing my daughters. Like, of course, Savannah Stan and her her beautiful stepsister got my chips and they got the prize package. So
that's awesome, man. Wow. Yeah.
And I'm sure my children would be so
be pissed
if they knew. Yeah, they are. One other thing before we get into Ciryl Gane and what was an amazing UFC live event in Paris. Here in the U.S., we are on the eve, essentially, of the NFL season, which is a very special time in the lives of many people. So one account I follow on Instagram, I should say, NFL memes_IG, and they posted something that said only one more week until I let a professional football team determine my mood for the next 4 months. And, you know, for a lot of us, that is our existence. I think for me as a Patriots fan going into this year, I'm not ambitious or optimistic necessarily. You know, I don't particularly think the quarterback is the next guy. But in most seasons, that team, if my expectations were a little bit loftier, would control my mood effectively for 4 months. And it would, my week would basically depend on that Sunday result, you know.
Right. But yeah, we've had many good years. We've had many good years.
Yeah. But at 44 years of age, it is interesting that that a football team could have that profound an impact on your everyday. All right, how are you recovering from you all right from the COVID-20 or whatever you had?
Dude, I've been feeling good. I've been feeling way better. So yeah, no, thank you about that. Right, that first day of the podcast, I was feeling way better. Now I'm infinitely better. Yeah, thank
you. All right. Ciryl Gane is feeling wicked good here on a Monday after what he was able to do against Tai Tuivasa. Could not have drawn it up any better for the combat sports leader. Unbelievable main event to headline a great card in Paris. And Ciryl Gane went in there a man with a plan, right? He wanted to finish the fight. He wanted to put on a show. He wanted to impress the promotion, the fan base, his fellow Parisians. I mean, I know we're not supposed to cuss as much, right? Mission fucking accomplished for Ciryl Gane. And I'm just so impressed with what he was able to do to sustain what happened early on in the fight in that second round. Big ups to both heavyweights, and we'll start obviously with the winner, Ciryl Gane.
Yeah, listen, I think that's the story, right? Is not only was it a very technical performance, I think he got a little bit lackadaisical during that exchange when he got caught by Tuivasa. But what he did do is learn a little bit more about himself and his ability to battle back, get back on track, and to not, you know, take it easy against any opponent, especially one as dangerous as Tuivasa. But when he's putting it together, man, again, as a heavyweight, and again, we haven't seen John Jones yet at heavyweight, but he moves better than anyone out there in that division. His footwork, he's so slick, he's so smooth. His footwork patterns, his angles that he creates, the different weapons that he uses, attacking the body, attacking the legs, going upstairs. He has a lot of cool little tricks that you just don't see a whole lot of heavyweights use or even have. Yeah. So I was really impressed with his performance. And again, his ability to battle back from getting knocked down and having to weather that storm, I thought was really impressive. He's going to learn a lot from that.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a great performance from Ciryl Gane.
Dr. David Abbasi, friend of the program, who has looked at my knee and handles several MMA athletes, Kayla Harrison and others, referenced a kick to the spleen by Ciryl Gane. Have you ever taken a kick to the spleen? You probably knew before this fight where the spleen was. I didn't know until the doctor's great explanation.
I've never taken a kick to the spleen. It sounds painful. It looks
you
painful.
Still have your spleen.
I still have it.
You still have your spleen. But yeah, I mean, Ciryl Gane mixing it up beautifully. I still would contend that he could fight a less risky fight too. Because if you're going for it and you're having aggression offensively in the heavyweight division, especially against a guy like Tai, at times you're going to leave yourself open. Tai's a great athlete. He's accurate and he connected. And I just think for Ciryl, this is just like a win within a win. I mean, just a brilliant performance and result. And in terms of his star power, it opens up so many big fights. And I do think Tuivasa's stock goes up for me as well. You know, the desire for him has aligned with the athleticism, right? And I do believe that he's getting better. He wants it. You know, I think I don't know if Tai Tuivasa can be champion necessarily, but I guess as far as Ciryl Gane is concerned, first, Ken Flo, what do you do with Gane now? Because, I mean, the world in a lot of respects is his oyster, as Francis Ngannou idols on the Met.
That's a good question, man. I don't know. I mean, who's out there for him right now? I don't know. Maybe it's the loser of John Jones and Stipe Miocic, perhaps.
So are we assuming that fight is going to happen? Is that the assumption that Jones and Stipe?
I think so. I think that's the fight that's going to happen. I think that's the fight that the UFC wants. I think Stipe and John Jones wants it as well. Francis Ngannou, when is he going to be ready? Another 6 months or so?
Right.
So unless he gets a rematch against Francis Ngannou, I don't know. Does he kind of just wait? Who else is out there? I don't have the
All right,
Cody. So do you have the rankings there? But
I got it all.
Okay, so there you go.
Look at Cody just popping right in. Oh, nice, where Cody's not double dipping today. When we go prime time, we don't have to worry about other people trying to, you know, pluck at our executive producer Cody Merrill. But so we'll see what happens with John Jones and Stipe. I mean, I don't know that any of us would be ambitious right now that. I think the last pay-per-view of the year might be December 10th. I mean, do we really think that they're going to lock the door behind Jones and Stipe December 10th? Looks like maybe January pay-per-view would be Brazil. I mean, I don't know. But I think John Jones, I guess, would be more viable now than before, given this result for Ciryl Gane. I mean, what a great way to distance himself from the Francis Ngannou fight. Curtis Blaydes is lurking and chirping. And what I like about Blaydes, another guy who's right there on the cusp and remarkably has never fought for the title, I don't believe. Aspinall's on the mend, Ngannou's on the mend, Stipe, who knows what's going on with him. You know, at some point you got to think that he's going to have at least one more fight. I think they'll probably do Aspinall and Tuivasa. You know, Tom Aspinall called for that fight. And it's just interesting. I think Mick Maynard and Dana White and Sean Shelby deserve a lot of credit for the way this played out, right? Because they struck with this fight between Gane and Tuivasa when it seemed like a foundation had been laid to make the fight between Tai Tuivasa and Tom Aspinall. So I think that might happen, but Blaydes and Gane both strike me as guys, Ken Flo, who want to stay active and want to compete.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think Gane, depending on, you know, whatever recovery time he needs, would be against, you know, getting in there with Curtis Blaydes in a main event setting. So I think you might see Blaydes and Gane next, but
that would be awesome.
Big night for the heavyweight division all around. We congratulate Ciryl Gane. Really good dude. Just seemed like an incredible environment. I look forward to talking to some of my colleagues next week to see how they enjoyed being there in Paris, France. Allons-y. Did anyone say Allons-y, which on the broadcast means let's go? So watching here and there on my phone. I did not ingest a lot of this fight card because I was trying to give the greatest living American, Brian Stann, my all. Man, did I feel inferior at this wedding, by the way. Right. I am surrounded by former Navy football players and Marines and CEOs. And I mean, I felt like a fucking runt, bro. You know, I mean, I really, truthfully, like, no, it's just a lot of impressive men and just sort of in awe of the bond. And obviously Stann leading the charge as usual. By the way, I don't think Brian Stann listens to the Anakin Florian podcast, but I do think that, you know, he had a segment on here for a while. We got to have him back on. What is it? Take a Stann or whatever he called it, you know? But I do believe the fan base enjoys the updates from the former WEC champion. Obviously, he was a staple of the UFC broadcast team. But if he listens, we're about to roll in a video that he's probably not going to enjoy. So basically, at the end of the night, you know, Stan's trying to coordinate the after party. And I love my buddy, but you know he loves a microphone like nobody's business. So here's Stann finding a hot microphone, if we have it, at the tail end of his wedding. Hey, Stann, I'm sorry if you're watching. Or listen.
You tell us where, right? You tell us where, and we're rolling. Once we get to that lobby, we are rolling as adults, and we're going to go rock that place. Let's go.
Let's go, B-Stan. Try to rally the troops in the middle of the night. I mean, I was browned out. I got back there, and this was last night, I think. Yes, I drove from L.A. to Vegas. We're in Las Vegas now. Here at the beautiful Waldorf Astoria. This is like a Ken Flo hotel in the Waldorf Astoria. Rest assured, I'm going to New York, New York, with the UFC masses in a couple of days. Lost my train of thought, but yeah, there's B. Stann at the end of the night.
That's so awesome.
I think the bar was closed when we got back here. All right, but I'm going in a lot of different directions today. Congratulations to Ciryl Gane. Great family, great guy. And I love Ty, man. I mean, the ultimate entertainer, one of the true showmen in the game today. All right, what'd you think of the co-main event, Robert Whittaker and Marvin Vettori? I mean, I got to think a fighter like you on your level just really enjoys watching Robert Whittaker continue to evolve, continue to get better.
Man, he's just, he's such a technician, and he knows exactly what he needs to do and when he needs to do it. You could see that his experience advantage, his speed advantage was very apparent in that fight. He's just always making great decisions. You know, he's one of those guys. Let's take the Adesanya fight out of it, but he never throws himself out of position. He's not making major mistakes, which was why that loss and the way that he lost the first time around against Adesanya was so unusual. He's just a very smart fighter. He's got a lot of different tools. And Marvin Vettori really was just ineffective throughout that fight. Really couldn't do much at all. The gains that he's made with his wrestling, his ability to, you know, counter a lot of takedown attempts and get back to his feet if he needs to. I was just really, really impressed. It's just another classic Robert Whittaker performance where he's very machine-like and he can make you look like you're not a very good fighter, even if you are good. And I think that's always a sign of a guy who is not good, but great.
And we talk about the word desire, and I think it can waver for fighters at times, not to suggest that Robert Whittaker's championship desire ever wavered. He's always had that medal for sure, but he wants it right now, like in a very bad way. Like he's just totally committed and focused and has that work-life balance with his family and everything else. And I just thought he performed beautifully. And there's a lot to get into on the Whittaker side, the Vettori side. Let's close the Vettori stuff up and then circle back on Whittaker and this perceived desire to move up to 205 pounds potentially. Marvin Vettori hasn't necessarily evolved a whole lot. I mean, certainly we can commend his chin and everything else. And he had a couple of moments here and there, I guess, you know, certainly I think Robert Whittaker would have finished most middleweights over these 15 minutes on this night. But what do you make of Vettori here in defeat? Just can't get over the hump against the two elite guys of this division.
Yeah, well, I think you kind of nailed it. I don't see a guy who is really improving and trying to be a better mixed martial artist necessarily. Maybe he is. Maybe that's a little strong. But as far as seeing new tools and new wrinkles to his game and other parts that are dangerous, I just don't see it. It was kind of exactly what I expected. And that's not a great thing. You want to see new tools. You want to see different strategies. You know, his best bet was just moving forward, pressuring, trying to, you know, get Whittaker to brawl with him a little bit, trying to get him on the ground. You know, he's not a submission threat necessarily. He's not a guy who's going to wow you with his speed or athleticism necessarily. He's a big, strong kid. But you know, I think what he needs is something different. There needs to be some other element, especially when it comes to his footwork and the type of strikes that he throws, because he's very predictable. There's very similar patterns with all of his fights. And that's a dangerous thing. If you're trying to be the best guy in the world, when you're doing the same thing over and over again, it's going to be easy for especially a guy like a Robert Whittaker, of course, to read what you're doing and then pick you apart.
Yeah, no, well played, well put. And we all know Vettori puts in the time, the hours. I mean, the man hours in training is not the question, but you wonder if maybe getting a different look. I think at this point, you know, pushing the reset button and doing that would make a lot of sense. So Robert Whittaker said to Submission Radio, I believe before the fight, and I quote, "I've been thinking about 205 pounds a fair bit. The problem is, wouldn't go to light heavyweight to come back down to middleweight just because I don't want to go to 205 as a fat 185er, right? See a lot of guys try that and they just get starts and they come back down. It doesn't make sense." And a lot of comments, obviously, in the post fight about being the most dangerous man in the division. Now, Daniel Cormier takes great exception to even his dear friend Kamaru Usman suggesting that he can go up and fight Jan Błachowicz, you know, and I certainly think that as a former welterweight, Whittaker would be tremendously outsized against somebody like Jiří Procházka, the current champion. But I do think Whittaker finds himself in a little bit of a tricky situation. I would like to see Robert Whittaker fight Paulo Costa in a main event. I mean, I think that is an enormous fight. I think the stars have aligned, the calendar aligns. I think that makes all the sense in the world. What are your thoughts on Whittaker or any, I guess, elite welterweight / middleweight going up to what is perceived to be a more shallow light heavyweight division and contender?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I think that Whitaker should stay at 185. He's not the biggest middleweight anyway, you know, anyway. So I think that he's in the right division. He unfortunately has, you know, Pereira and Adesanya in front of him, who are going to be very tough challenges for him, whoever wins that fight. But I think you're spot on with his next potential challenge. I would love to see him against Paulo Costa. I think that's a big fight. I definitely think that's a big main event fight night, or perhaps a co-main event for a pay-per-view. I think that's right about there. And for Vettori, again, yes, the 205-pound division is kind of weak right now. Should he go up to 205? No, that's not the answer for him. He just needs to improve his skills, keep doing what he's doing, and you know, just try to add some new wrinkles into his game. But other than that, you know, people always try to find a different weight class as a solution. I certainly fought in a lot of different weight classes, some because I had to and some because I chose to. But it wasn't necessarily the right, you know, choice for me going down to 145, even though I had a title shot. You know, you got to find that weight class that is best for you. That makes the most amount of sense. For me, it was 155. And I think that's kind of the same case for someone like Vettori.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what they do with Robert Whittaker. But I do think the Paulo Costa fight, that just gets me so excited. And Costa called for it on Saturday night or on Sunday shortly after the fight. All right. Longo's coming up here in a couple of minutes if he answers the primetime bell here on the East Coast. What'd you think of Nassour Dinimavov against a very competitive Joaquin Buckley? Unanimous decision, 29-28 times two, and 30-27, the dissenting judge, all in favor of the streaking Nassour Dinimavov.
I thought Buckley, you know, tried, you know, valiantly to try to create angles and mix things up. He was switching his stances a lot. He was shifting his stances as he came forward, which I thought threw Imavov off a little bit. But Imavov is a tremendous fighter, man. I think he lacked in experience. You could see that in round three. That's what allowed Buckley to come back into the game. But from a skills perspective, from a size perspective, and from someone who knows how to put it all together, I thought it was pretty clear that Imavov was the better fighter. Buckley, you know, showed a lot of heart moving forward. He's too small for that division, I think. As far as if you want to make a run at a belt, if he wants to just fight and get big fights, okay, that's fine. But if you're trying to be a top five, you're trying to be elite in that division, that's probably not the division for Buckley, in my opinion. I thought he showed a lot of heart in round three. I thought he won round three, but it was largely because Imavov, I thought, was getting a little bit frustrated, a little bit winded, and didn't really have the experience to fall back on to kind of, I guess, cruise or dominate the rest of that fight. So, I think Imavov is someone to watch. Do not sleep on this kid. I said this before his last fight, even in his loss against Phil Hawes, I said, this is a guy who you need to watch. I think he's going to be a really good fighter moving forward. And I think he's going to be very dangerous and potential contender in the future.
Yeah. Well played. I got a buddy who loves betting on Nassour Dinimavov and cashed another ticket this weekend.
Nice.
All right, let us get to the star of the program. Let us get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
There
Yo.
He is.
Hello.
There
man.
He is.
Hello there, my boys. How we
What's
feel?
Up, man? How we doing?
Good. How was the wedding?
Oh, it was great. It was great. Let's show Ray a video, not of Brian Stan lathered at the end of the night, but let's show the final song of the night. I mean, watch this, Ray, with B. Stan in the middle of I mean, come on. I mean, it's as good as it gets. God bless the USA, surrounded by a bunch of Marines. It's a tight-knit group. It was a special night, you know.
That's awesome, man. Congrats to Brian Stan, man. What a just a great guy.
It is amazing. It is really amazing. So I ran into some dude like at the hotel pool, and he had just met Brian the night before. And so I told him, you know, former broadcast partner, whatever. And he said, you know, you must have felt really inferior standing next to that guy for 5 years. And I'm like, yes, like, absolutely. Like, it really is an interesting feel. I mean, I certainly feel that with Ken Flo as well. Like, Kenny is a great living American. Ray Longo is as well. But Beeston is like, I mean, the dude is just like, don't give me Tom Brady, greatest living American. Tom Brady never served the United States of America.
Exactly.
So how are you, Ray?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Where are you?
You're back from Calabasas?
I actually drove to Vegas today, getting ready for UFC 279. You know, just keep burning it at all ends. I mean,
you don't stop, you know? Man. It is crazy when you get on that wheel and it just keeps rolling, man.
Hamster wheel.
The hamster wheel.
That's what it is. Yeah. I don't even know where I am right now. Got a little buckled last night. But did you see Ciryl Gane and Tai Tuivasa?
Woo! Beautiful fight. Beautiful.
I mean, so Ken Flo and I called a heavyweight fight in Brisbane, Australia in 2013 between Mark Hunt and Bigfoot Silva. Ubiquitously regarded as one of the best heavyweight fights of all time. Ken Flo, I don't know if this was that, right? This wasn't a full 25 minutes. It wasn't the back and forth of that. But I don't know, sitting in a hotel room watching this thing on my cellular telephone, you know, I thought this was like the greatest fight I'd ever seen. I don't know. I thought it was unbelievable to watch the back and forth that second round. I have so much respect for Ty and defeat. What do you have for us on the main event? Raymond.
Man, just a technical masterpiece. And I mean, he did get dropped. So it had everything you want in the fight, right? The guy's doing good. Then he gets dropped, gets right back up. He comes back, he wins the fight. But I mean, it's the teep kicks and the jab just dictated that fight. And it, those teep kicks, the way he throws them to the solar plexus, and then he was hitting the liver kicks. I mean, he just wrecked that guy's midsection. He occupied him. He mesmerized him with the jab and he crushed him with those kicks to the midsection. And that's the story of the fight against a guy that could take a beating. He broke him down, man. He broke him down, and he's going to break a lot of people down because he's hard to get to. And now, you know, I think that even getting dropped will help him moving on to the future. He knows he can come back against a huge puncher that puts people down. He came back. So I think he shows everything you want in a fighter. And for a guy that big to move like that so beautiful and elegantly and just – the gracefulness and, you know, his in and out for a big guy. He looked great. He looked great against a guy that was on a good roll. So,
yeah, you hit on a lot of good things there, as you often do. Yeah, this win has got to be a huge confidence builder to fight a puncher like that, to take his best shot and to ultimately put him away like that. You remember the worst kick that either of you guys took, teep to the solar plexus or the spleen or the liver? I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun. Ciryl Gane should change his nickname from Bongama to the Organ Hunter. You know, I mean, this dude is just targeting organs. Ken Flo, you remember the worst one you took to the body?
I actually never got hit ever.
I knew it was coming.
Fighting.
Never.
So I don't know really what it's like. No, I remember I took a knee. I remember taking a knee and like almost wanting to go down. I'm like, I can't go down from a body shot. But that was in sparring. I never ate a body shot in a fight, thankfully. But yeah, man, I don't know, but they're not fun. They're not fun. I always try to hurt people to the body, you know. I've seen guys get dropped all the time in training and stuff like that. But in a fight, it's a horrible feeling, man. It just your whole body shuts down. You want to keep fighting, but you get folded like a lawn chair. And you know, anytime you look, you want to look into your own asshole. That's never a good thing.
Huh. Ray, do you ever recall taking? You had to have taken.
I can tell you one thing. I never wanted to look into my asshole. That I never did. I never did, and I really always tried to stop. I always tried to stop other people too from looking in there, Kenny. I really, as a human being, I feel obligated.
It's not right.
To make
it's not
sure
right.
Nobody goes near my asshole. I don't know it's why, not, but it's just.
It's not normal. It's not just, normal.
I couldn't do that to anybody, even my worst enemy. I'd have to say, no, please don't do that. It's not going to be good.
No.
Oh,
no.
Kenny, I think he just went and looked in your own asshole.
Yeah,
we lost his
he
head
buckled,
for a minute.
He buckled me with a...
Holy
with
a bro.
He keeps trying, or
John,
so it appears.
Or not, I've never been, even in sparring, hurt to the body. I mean, the worst kick I took was to the Adam's apple, and that thing was...
Oh,
that stopped me in my tracks.
Oh God!
Oh yeah, that was one of the shittiest feelings I ever had. But body wise, I normally I used to like to even tempt people to hit me in the body so it would open up their head, you know. But I never felt that, thank God.
I will say one thing, and we talk a lot about Longo's greatness on this show, and it is incredible. It really, truly is incredible to have three different undisputed UFC champions from three different eras to be able to lay claim to wins over Anderson Silva and Jose Aldo and all of these legends, George St. Pierre, that you guys have, you know, effectively left in your wake. But the sacrifice that you have made with your body, and I'm hoping you'll share the story just a little bit, right? Like, for Ray right now at, you know, whatever age, like 52, 53 years old, whatever he is now, like, but he's just been kicked to hell. And at one point back in the day, you were in Las Vegas, I believe, there was some sort of Ultimate Fighter tryout. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you ended up having to, you know, absorb and hold pads for hours on end, and it beat you up pretty good. Can you tell that story to our audience?
That happened. I tell you, I used to like when the guys from Spike told it, because it wasn't me talking, but there's still a couple of people from Spike. That was in Manhattan. I went in, Matt was fighting Carol Parisian. He goes, "You want to come with me tomorrow? You know, we're going to do a little promo for the Parisian fight." And I said, "Yeah, all right. What time?" He goes, "I'll pick you up at like 5:30 in the morning." So not just, I want to, you guys know me now, so you can tell. Dang. Even back then, if I was getting up at 9, that would be so funny.
Early.
Gets me in the car, and then we get down there. They're also doing the tryouts for season 2. So Dana's like, "Oh man, we have nobody." Now we're at Henzo Gracie's Academy. And he's like, "We have nobody to hold pads." And now it's probably like 6:30 in the morning. Matt goes, "Longo will do it."
He now, just Henzo's volunteered you?
At the time, no, Kenny. Henzo's at the time. This, I swear to God, I really would like somebody else to tell the story. But Henzo's at the time was at jiu-jitsu school. So there ain't a fucking tie pad to be seen. So they find the shittiest fucking 2 tie pads you ever want, where the Velcro, I want to say, is almost reversed. So, you know, the sticky part, Kenny, that's on my forearms. This isn't even a joke, right? So now I go like this. I remember, who the hell was there? Somebody else was there. I think it was Tom DeFazio. And it's got to be like 100 guys. And I'm just in the ring going and going and going. And I remember Rachel Leah was there, and I think Dana sent her over. She comes over, she goes, "Dana said he'll pay anything you want." I mean, I'm taking a fucking beating.
Getting hit in the balls, the legs, the head.
Somebody's pumping me full of Gatorade in between rounds, and now that Velcro on my arms actually caused, like, the scraping. By the time I was done, I had, like, third-degree burns on my arms. I had to get, like, the doctor prescribed like special cream, I think, or whatever, but it was Kenny. It was about an hour and a half straight. It was
of guys who probably 50-60% of them didn't even know how to strike. And you're just
couldn't even hit the pad. I got hit in the head more than I got.
Now fuck that.
You know, Kenny, a fucking ass beating. So there's a guy, I can't think of the guy's name. I think Schwartz was his name. It was
from Spike. Spike, yeah. TV. Yeah.
Nice guy, right?
Yeah, he is.
He would tell people when they met, "That's the toughest motherfucker I ever met in my life." I mean, dude, it was, that might have been the worst thing I ever did. It was nonstop. And okay, like Kenny says, "John, you're talking about guys that are getting on the show. They suck. So you got 100
guys, right?
Think of the 60 guys that don't get on the show. How bad they are!"
Oh my goodness!
I know you're a man of humility.
I was out for a while with that. Bad.
Did you at least get a check? Did they give you? Did they hook you up with something?
He's not going to comment on that part.
It's funny
of it,
you bring that up there, Ken, because that check never made it.
I knew.
But this was at a point.
You got a really nice doctor's bill, though. That was nice.
Yeah. No, Dr. Sherry saved me, man. She was pissed when she looked at my arms, and she goes, that's bad. Like, it was bad. Damn. And then, but that was at a point where they were losing money still. They still weren't making money. So I forgive them for the lack of the check. But Rachel Lee, I think she goes, "Name your price." Like, it was bad. Like, anybody looking was like, "This is, the fuck is the guy doing?" It was horrible.
Yeah, I wanted you to tell that story because you've made a tremendous bodily sacrifice. And no, you are one tough mother effort. You know, even if you don't like New Yorkers, you got to at least respect Longo, folks. You know, even if you don't like New Yorkers, right?
Who doesn't like New Yorkers? What are we talking about?
Bostonians.
Bostonians. Like, they're really
better. Excited for the NFL football season, or are we still in this NFL boycott?
Nah.
Oh, my God.
Don't even know it exists.
All right.
I would like to get back into it, though, but I doubt it'll happen.
Oh, American football, baby. American football. Robert Whitaker, what do you have for us on Bob Knuckles?
Real simple. Another tactical masterpiece. Here's the thing on that fight. He was one step ahead of him the whole fight. He read everything that was coming, and the other guy had no clue as to what was going on. Well, he just can't. You know, I think with Vittori, I don't know him at all, but you could see there were fights where he clearly lost that he thought he won. So I think he's that guy who's hard to, you know, he must be hard to change because he made no adjustments on the fly in this fight at all. If anything, it just got worse and worse and worse, and he's got a cinder block head so he could take the punishment. But man, Whitaker was just a step ahead. You could see he was reading everything that guy was throwing. Period. I don't know how else to describe the fight. And you know, the fact that the other guy could take it even made it, you know, kind of better. He got good work in.
Right.
But nothing. No, there was just no adjustments made at all.
Yeah. Kempfler, what you laughing about off the top there? Can you tell us?
About the race story. It's just, I'm just dying.
Oh, he's still marinating on all that.
Yeah,
I'm
seeing Ray just get knocked around.
Oh, no. I'm telling you, Kenny. And there was one guy said I held the pads wrong because I didn't want to get him on the show. Like, he was so bad. Yeah, I don't even like it. I could come up with another 10 stories.
I could just visualize. It's the worst position to be in. I mean, it's horrible.
But again, horrible. Kenny, now it's 6:30 in the morning. So think about that. I am completely shot.
Yeah.
Shot.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so
Whitaker, I thought Whitaker looked great. You know, Whitaker, unfortunately, his problem is going to be he'll probably never be able to get by Adesanya. So I think for him, the best thing that could happen is Pereira beats Adesanya, creates the interest for Whitaker to jump in there again. I think for everybody, for the organization, and you know, for pay-per-view buys, something like that. But Whitaker just looked great. He looked really great against, you know, a guy that's ranked right up in the top five.
I would be stunned if Pereira beats Adesanya and doesn't have to beat him again. You know, I mean, maybe the calendar would align where Whitaker could somehow slide in there, but I just feel like if Pereira beats Izzy, Izzy's getting another crack at him. But
I'm just saying for Whitaker, that's got to be what he's pulling for instead of Adesanya winning again. The chances of him going back in there, even though that last fight was close, you know, the UFC's now in a conundrum with all these, you know, like Figueiredo and Moreno.
I didn't think that last fight was as close as some did between Whitaker and Adesanya, with respect. But that's
I mean, I honestly don't even, you know.
Like, my dream fight for 2 years now has been Khamzat Chimaev versus Colby Covington. And am I crazy? Like, Whitaker Costa might be my new dream fight. Like, I love that fight. Paulo Costa and Robert Whitaker. They've never fought before. What am I missing? No? No, you don't share my enthusiasm, Ray.
No, Whitaker wins that fight easy.
Well, that's fine, but it's not like he's more than -200 against Costa. Maybe in Longo's sports book. I'm taking a bath. Like, if my wife,
John, I'm going to agree with you on one thing. If we could guarantee to see the Paulo Costa that fought like Romero and Uriah Hall, 100%. I just think he's unreliable. You're not sure what you're getting.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I mean, the guy just stood in front of a guy that had his hands on his knees. He was completely out of breath and he couldn't take advantage of that. Who the fuck is this guy beat? Who the fuck is this guy? No, I actually, you know what? He's actually, wait, I take that back though. He's actually a nice guy. I hope I'm not going to criticize him, but I actually like he's not a bad guy at all.
I'm going to tell him that Longo is one of his defenders. See what he says, you know. I actually think Paulo Costa is more handsome than a prime Ray Longo, and that's saying something because he's more handsome than most men in your prime.
He's a supermodel, that guy.
No, but he's a supermodel of a human being. A like, secret. He's a great guy.
Great. He's a really good guy. I'm just looking to make a couple of jokes.
Of course you are. I know. Yeah. Look at Longo fucking retreating.
I'll tell you.
Back to New York.
You know whose mother is in love with Paulo Costa?
Bruce Buffer's mom, Connie.
Damn. 100%.
Correct. Right.
100%.
That's my guy, Buff.
Happy birthday, Connie.
Well, Costa did a video for Bruce's mother. I was there. That's okay. What I said.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Was it for Bruce or? Was it Bruce or Bruce's mom?
It was for Bruce's mom.
Okay. All right. Let's make it sure.
We were at, you know what? I'm not going to tell that story right now. I'll do it. I might have done this before. We're at Longo Wyman MMA a few weeks ago after the Long Island show, and Buff's trying to give Longo like this video. I probably told this story before, and Ray's like, no, I'm good. You know, thank you, Bruce, but it's okay. Like, we're just hanging out. And Buff's like, no, you know, I'll give you a free video right now. Like, you promote your gym. And Ray's like, no, I'm good. You know, thank you though, Bruce, but I'm good. And then finally he said a third time, Ray's like, all right, man, you know, I'll take the video. Cody was there. That's my view.
It's never been posted.
I'm still going to go back. Kenny, I wish you were there. We had a great time. But Buff,
I wish I was there for that, man.
That's the best Bruce Buffer I've seen. This guy was unbelievable.
He's on fire.
What a gracious guy, even at the restaurant. I mean, I seen a different side of him. I love the guy. I really do. He's just a great guy. He handled that crowd like the true professional that he is. And I'll tell you, when he makes those videos off the cuff, the guy doesn't skip a beat.
He's great.
No doubt. I didn't want to tell you career earnings on Cameo for Bruce Buffer. I mean, the guy is an absolute machine. Go to cameo.com if you would like Bruce Buffer to give you a happy birthday or wedding intro.
Give me an approximation.
I'm not going to do that. Ken Flo and I are on Cameo as well.
We are.
If you so desire. You know.
Not the best career earnings. But
yeah, not a great number for
this. Yeah, we're there.
I tell you, though, it means a lot, right? Like, I just got one from some dude. One of three sons trying to wish their dad a happy Father's Day in Australia. Buff was probably too expensive. Like, we'll just get Anik for this one. You know, Buff's a little too expensive, you know. But no, it's cool when, like, you know, you feel like on Father's Day they give their dad a gift, and it's like you wishing the guy a happy birthday. It's a cool thing, you know, or a happy Father's Day, I guess. All right, Ray. A few more minutes with you.
Yeah.
I would like to talk to you about the pay per view in Las Vegas coming up this weekend. The main event is Khamzat Chimaev and Nate Diaz. Now, the betting line has bounced around. Depending on where you place your bets, Nate Diaz has been seen as high as +940 in some spots against Khamzat Chimaev. Khamzat -1150 and Nate is +750. That's the number that I'm going with for our program today. What are your thoughts on the main event? And if you had to give a percentage as to what percent chance do you give Nate Diaz to spring the upset, where would you fall on that?
Well, if I had to give repeat that.
What
again,
percent chance do you give Nate Diaz to win? Because the betting odds suggest that it's less than 10%. And I don't agree with that.
Listen, I think Nate Diaz is always in the fight. You know, even losing four rounds to Leon Edwards, he clips him at the end. He's got the guy on ice skates. He could always get you. So he's never out of the fight. He's got, you know, a great defensive jiu-jitsu. I don't think he'll get beat up on the floor. I just think stylistically it's not a good matchup for him. But I love Nate Diaz. I'll be definitely pulling for him. But I think Nate has to hope that he kind of makes the same mistakes he made with Burns. He was just too willing to, you know, not mix it up, stand up with him, or maybe, you know, it's a 5-round fight. Maybe Nate could gas him out and maybe do something in the later rounds. I mean, that's a possibility, but I think Nate's Achilles heel was always the takedowns, and, you know, you can't win fights off your back unless, you know, the scoring has changed and he could do some damage. I don't know, but I'm pulling for Nate either way.
Yeah.
But those odds are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now on DraftKings Sportsbook, Nate is down to +675, right? So that shows you some of the movement, but it's been bouncing around. You know, my twin brother called me, and he's like, dude, I see Diaz +940. Now, Khamzat Chimaev is the best prospect I've ever seen in MMA, essentially, or at least certainly in my time with the UFC. But I don't know. It's a huge number next to a guy who's fought 26 times in there. Ray, we got to go. Thanks for the time on a Monday night. When are you next out of here? No contender series this week, huh? Oh, that was quick, huh?
Holy Jesus, man, Jim, you just hit me with 15 things in 2 seconds.
I know, and people think I'm all like hooped up on cocaine or Adderall, and it's not that at all. It's that I'm underslept, you know, a little bit hungover. I drove 6 hours today, you know. But yeah, I'm like a ping pong ball, a little bit all over the place. Like, DC spent a few minutes with me and my twin brother, and he was like, dude, what is wrong with you guys?
Guy's giving me anxiety.
I know. Dude,
can you slow down?
Dude, I played golf with DC and my twin brother, and he's like, dude, what is fucking wrong with you guys?
I tell you, you're not making a good case for not being on cocaine right now, I'll be honest. He's not on, they think he's on cocaine and Adderall. They couldn't be further from the truth. Ritalin he's on. Jeez, are you all right? Can you take a deep breath? Can you do your box breathing right now? Do the box breathing.
Yeah.
Feel better, no?
Yeah, I feel a lot better.
Take a sedative and let's get back to the show.
I think I was just trying to outro you. Is that what was going
on? Holy crow, that was the most anxious outro I've ever had in my life. I don't even know where we left off. Anyway, listen, I'm heading to the Ring of Combat this weekend.
Okay.
Steve the Manager Lee's fighting and Armando Gaethje.
Steve Lee fighting.
Let's go, Steve.
Come on, Steve Lee. When is Steve Lee fighting?
Friday night. I expect you to be watching from Vegas.
Okay. All right. Steve Lee, let's go. Get it done for the podcast.
Am I missing anything else? I think that's it. I don't even know. But...
All right, buddy. Well, have a great day and a better evening, and we will talk to you next week. All right.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Right. Happy Labor Day.
You too, brother. There he is, the Ray Longo Minute, every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. Yeah, my brain is going in a million fucking directions right now.
You got energy. That's good. That's a good thing.
All right. Today's episode of the Anik and Florian podcast is brought to you in part by DraftKings Sportsbook. Come and correct with an offer for new customers, as usual, for UFC 279, Chimaev versus Diaz. You bet $5 on any fighter, and win or lose, no matter what happens, you get $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. The promotion runs from today, September 5th, through Saturday, September 10th, which is pay-per-view evening. This is a promotion for new customers only. Promo code for the offer should be in my bio. You can click the link. UFC 279 is Saturday, of course, live on pay-per-view. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook application and get on in there with us this weekend. I think there are a lot of good opportunities to make some money, and certainly with a couple of late additions there with Kevin Holland and D-Rod, and of course, Li Jingliang and Tony Ferguson. All systems go for UFC 279. So $5 on any fighter to win or lose for new customers on DraftKings Sportsbook. $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook application. Not now, but now. All right, it is time for the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
To that end, we call on the handicapper to the stars, Big Gun Brian Petrie, MMA Takes podcast.
Yes.
Coming in hot and heavy this week. It's good to see you, brother. What's the good word?
Nothing. Good word to you boys. Johnny, I saw you at Brian Stan's wedding. Looked like a blast. Very jealous. I'm a big wedding guy. I don't drink often, but when I do, it's at a wedding, and then my wife has to carry me off the dance floor. So it's a good time. So I'm ready to get in these fights. I'm excited, man.
Well, if Ken Flo or I ever renew our vows, you're going to be a part of that festivity. Thank you. I'm not inclined to do that necessarily. But it's interesting, right? Because I did post a lot of Brian Stan content over the weekend, and somebody commented on my Instagram and said, like, hey, is this like a Brian Stan account now? Like, geez, man, you know? And it's like, it all comes from a good place. Like, but Brian obviously has a very special relationship with a lot of his former Jackson Wink fighters and a lot of the MMA masses, as Ken Flo does, right? And so I really do it to sort of shine some love on him and allow some of those people maybe who have been out of his life to, you know, see him and try to reconnect them. Right. So that's the reason for all of that. And, you know, as long as the bride and groom are okay with it, that's really all.
Yeah, right.
All right. So before we make these picks, Bri, if you have 60 seconds for us on anything that happened in Paris, I mean, just a sensational live event. And it's just amazing when you set the table, you go to France for the first time, and you hope that it'll play out like this, right? And they certainly could have gone with Tommy Aspinall against Tai Tuivasa. That was Aspinall's wish. They go with this Gon Tuivasa fight, and matchmaking certainly worked out.
Yeah, I mean, as MMA fans, we're spoiled sometimes, and we shit a lot of times on maybe a lackluster main event, and especially a lackluster heavyweight main event, because you expect heavyweights to just bang it out over in the first round. It goes five rounds, sometimes get a bit dry. But that was an amazing fight. Gon looked on point. He looked aggressive. He fought smart. Tai Tuivasa is an absolute fucking savage. I mean, I knew he was tough. I didn't know he was that tough. He took some big shots. He got head kicked. And I think he like fake wobbled kind of Derek Lewis and then threw some haymakers. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat. I loved it. Wow. I had Gon by third round finish as well. So it all worked out for me as well. So with my green colored glasses, I was happy. And as an MMA fan, I was happy as well.
Yeah, big, big night for the UFC. But we got to transition to the pay-per-view, boys. It beckons here in a few days. And likely an electric way, I would think, to kick off the main card, light heavyweight, Iwan Kutelaba, minus 180. I need reading glasses. Johnny Walker Blue is plus 150. So Walker coming back here, BP, after main event losses to Thiago Santos and then more recently Jamal Hill. Now finds himself as the dog to Iwan Kutelaba, trying to sort of rebuild himself. Your thoughts on Johnny Walker in the role of underdog this weekend?
Yeah, I don't miss many events, and I could have swore these guys fought. It seems like they'd fight. I had to look back and go, what's going on? Walker's been on a bit of a skid. You know, he's bounced around camps. I believe he settled in Ireland. I know he's marrying an Irish lady, so I don't know if it's – but he's back and forth, and I'm really worried about his confidence because he got knocked out bad his last time against Jamal Hill. I mean, that was clean as they come. And, you know, so I'm worried about where his confidence is at, because where's this explosive guy at? Where's this guy that entered the UFC was putting everyone out? Enter Kutelaba, who I broke down before. He's an absolute fucking wild man. He eats nails for breakfast. He'll fist fight anyone that drinks light beer. I mean, this guy is intense.
Brian Stan likes Bud Light.
Bud Light.
Bud Light. Right. Like, just give me anything but Bud Light.
Brian
give me
Stan,
a fucking Coors Light.
Oh, Brian Stan can only drink mimosas, and I'd be cool with it because of what he's done in this world. Modelo, yeah.
Those drinks. With a fighting spirit, maybe. I don't know. T3, if you'd like a protein snack potentially with your meal, yeah, I don't know, bro.
Absolutely. But as Kutelaba is a wild man, he's also inconsistent. 1-3-1 in his last five. And he's trying to really rebound. He's trying to figure out what he is. Am I a striker? Am I not? He's looking for the ground game. He's strong. He's aggressive in there. The Devin Clark fight, he looked mean. Walker is massive for light heavyweight. And I think that's one of his problems. I mean, for having a bad chin right now, because the chin is suspect. I think that weight cut is a problem. I like to see him go up to heavyweight. He's fucking 6'6", for crying out loud. Go up to heavyweight. But as explosive as Walker is, and I wish the number was better on Johnny Walker here, I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to go Kutelaba. And I actually like the over. I think Kutelaba is going to make this a boring fight, take him to the ground where Johnny's weak, and ride out a decision here.
All right, Kutelaba, good Sambo guy. 13th UFC appearance, coming off a quick loss to Ryan Spann by submission earlier this year. Kenny, the Hulk's fought a really good schedule. Glover Teixeira, Magomed Ankalaev a couple times. Eric Nixik, now the chief voice in his corner. Your thoughts on Kutelaba, the favorite here against Johnny Walker Black?
Kutelaba is very tough. You know, I think he's not going to be threatened from Johnny Walker as far as, you know, a ground game or jiu-jitsu or anything like that. I think that more than anything else, Johnny Walker, it can be very explosive. He can be dangerous. I think that's where we saw him early on. There was a lot of flash. There was a lot of pizzazz, but there was no substance to his game. And we're seeing that over and over again. He's a guy who's very physically gifted, but as far as technical skills, the foundation, the basics of his game is just not good. And he's got to get that much, much sharper. I don't see that happening. He stands very upright with his chin up in the air. Not a good thing to have against someone like Kutelaba. You know, not to say Kutelaba is going to finish him for sure. The way that they fight, I'd be surprised if this goes the distance. If it does, I still think Kutelaba is the favorite here. So I'm sticking with Kutelaba.
All right, next up on the UFC 279 pay-per-view main card, sneaky huge fight here, boys, in the women's bantamweight division. Irene Aldana, minus 200. Macy Chasson, plus 170. Chasson has won 3 of 4, positioning herself for a pretty big fight here against someone in the division's top five. I believe Aldana is in the top five. She has only fought once in the last 22 months or so, Bri. Perhaps that gives some people some pause. But certainly her knockout of Ketlin Vieta continues to age quite well. Your thoughts on Aldana here, about 2-1 over Macy Chasson?
Yeah, I like Macy coming off the Ultimate Fighter. I was really high on her, and I feel like she's just kind of stayed in the middle. I think this is a huge fight for her, but I'm all over Adonna in this. I like the number. I thought the number would be higher here. I think she's better on the feet. I think she's good off her back if Macy wants to get it to the ground. Adonna's really big turning point was that submission over Beth Carrera because she started her UFC career 0-2. Armbar Beth Carrera, had a really close fight with Raquel Pennington and has gone on a nice little run. Like you mentioned, KO'd Caitlin Vieira, which is no easy task. TKO'd Yana Kutsukaya, who's also a very good fighter as well. That was her last time out.
You are having fun with these names today, aren't you?
Did I hit anyone?
You know how much I love you. I mean, you're doing okay.
I thought I was in the pocket with Kutsukaya. I mean, I actually
sometimes I love when you go.
Kutsukaya.
Goes a little bit quickly, you know.
Right. If it's a name, I don't know. That's why I'm not even trying to pronounce Macy's last name. I fucked that up every time.
Guys, he's anyway. Not even a pothead. He's calling Ketlin, Caitlin. And, you know. It's okay.
I like Aldana here. Thank you, John, for making fun of my marbles in my mouth and my pronunciation. I do like Aldana here. I think she wins by knockout. I think she's mean, too. She's mean in there. I like a finish by Aldana. I'm going to play her by finish by KO, and I'm going to play her by the number. The number doesn't scare me, even though it's 2-1.
Petrie undeterred. Aldana lost to Holly Holm in a main event that was October of 2020, Fight Island. She stopped Yana Kunitskaya at UFC 264. That was July of 2021. Has been more than a year for Aldana. Chasson coming on up. Ken Flo, your thoughts on this one at 135.
You know, I think Aldana is a very good striker. You know, I think the way that she moves her feet, she can counter strike, she gets some angles, she hits very hard when she's sitting down on her punches. And Chasson, I think, has got a lot of different skills, and she's a smart fighter. You know, I think that, I don't know, I would have liked to seen, and maybe this is where BP was going, but I would have liked to seen more development in her game. I thought she had a lot of potential. I still think she does. I'd like to see her add on to those skills a little bit more. I still think at times she doesn't let her hands go when she should. You know, very physically gifted, tall, lanky for the division. Aldana is as well. But, you know, I think that Aldana is just a little bit too clean of a striker. I think, I don't know if she's going to get the KO win, but I think she'll know how to win rounds and win this here against Chasson.
Next up, a recent addition to the UFC 279 lineup. Kevin Holland, -190. Daniel Rodriguez, +160. Brian, this one to be contested at a catch weight of 180 pounds. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I love that they added this to beef up the card. The card was, you know, depending on the main event, they added two really good fights. This is one of them. I love Kevin Holland at 170. I know this is a catch weight, but really he's fighting another 170. And D-Rod's a beast, dude. D-Rod could be on a 13-fight win streak. I thought he won the Dalby fight, but, you know, it is what it is. So he's 6-1 in the UFC, and he's proven to be pretty well-rounded. He can take your neck. He can submit you. Really good boxing in the pocket. Tough, durable dude as well. Great record overall. And I think he's a good, good fighter. Problem is, I think Kevin Holland is a special fighter at 170. I'm putting a special stamp on him.
Yeah, you are.
I think he's looked great in his first two UFC fights at 170. Started a little bit slow. Took him a while to get there. But he's an absolute sniper when he finds it. And, you know, he's I can't even think of the word now. I'm distracted. Now I think I'm going to mispronounce it. Get doggone. Here we go. Kevin Holland is a sniper. I think people maybe sleep on his power a little bit, even though he knocks people out. He's knocked people out 85. He's finished both these guys at 205. Yeah. He's also good on the ground. Both these guys coming on short notice, no one's going to wrestle. That's the big knock on Kevin Holland. Oh, you can't take him. You can take him down. You can wrestle him because he went through that skid at 185. But neither of these guys are wrestlers. They're taking a fight on 2 weeks' notice. They're not going to waste that energy. They're going to go in there. They're going to bang it up. I think Daniel Rodriguez might have more of the technical boxing. He's a little smooth. The straight punches are really nice. But Kevin Holland on the outside is just a problem. I don't know how Kevin Holland's going to win. I don't have my finger on how this ends. But I do like Kevin Holland to win. I'm going to stay by TKO, but it very well could be a decision because Daniel Rodriguez has never been finished. So give me Kevin Holland.
Nicely done, big guy. D-Rod has won 3 in a row, all in what was a perfect 2021 for him. This will be his first start of the year. Holland Kenny making his 16th UFC appearance in just over 4 years on the roster, certainly has been a workhorse for the UFC, and 2-0 with as many finishes for Holland thus far in 2022. Your thoughts on him here, favored over D-Rod Daniel Rodriguez?
Well, I think it's one of those fights that are very interesting because Kevin has stayed very busy, and you wonder if he's not healthy, if he's not 100%, you do not want to be in there with someone like a D-Rod who is going to be in your face. He's going to pressure you. He's going to back you up. I think there's a lot of value on Daniel Rodriguez right now. I really do. I think he is a hard guy to put away. I think that similar to Kevin Holland, he's a guy that tends to heat up as the fight goes on. I think that's going to be very interesting. I think he's fighting with a lot of confidence right now. He's very comfortable in the octagon right now. But who's the more technical fighter? Who's the more capable fighter? I think Kevin Holland is, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. That's why I'm leaning towards Kevin Holland. I'm going to pick Kevin Holland here, but I do think there's some serious value on D-Rod.
Nicely done, my man. Co-main event now, guys. The Leech, Li Jingliang, minus 260. Tony Ferguson, plus 220. Another fight that was added to UFC 279 about 3 weeks ago. So the Leech responded beautifully to his loss to Khamzat Chimaev, stoppage of Muslim Salikov. That was July 16th on ABC. On the other side, Brian Ferguson moves up to welterweight, and the former UFC interim lightweight champion trying to get his first win since 2019 when he bested Donald Cerrone. Your thoughts on Ferguson here against the Leech, Li Jingliang?
Man, I have such mixed feelings on this fight because is Tony coming back? You guys talked about it last week. Tony coming back too soon? Is he done? How's his chin? Well, with all that worries aside, I like that that's at 170, and I think this is a good matchup for both guys. I want to commend Tony because the last time I broke his fight down, I kind of shitted on his training camp a little bit. The comments let me have it. He switched it up. He went to Jackson's, and every coach that is at Jackson's is telling us this guy's coach will be a workhorse. I think you need that. I think you need to go, instead of running your own camps, you go to a camp like Jackson's. If Greg Jackson's corner, I think Greg Jackson's such a great mind. Brandon Gibson, Mike Winklejohn, all those guys. But the Leech doesn't give a fuck about any of that. I mean, he don't care. I mean, the Leech is mean. I was surprised that he's been in the UFC since 2014. That's 8 years. That's crazy. But he's 34 now. And this is his biggest fight in the UFC in my date. So this is his time is now, especially at 170, being 34, being a pretty good size 170. I think the time is now, you know, and the Leech is a durable, tough dude. He's got a bigger chin than Drew Dober. He's got a Jay Leno on his face. He's never been knocked out, but his weakness has been the ground. You know what I mean? He can get taken out. He's even submitted. We've seen it before. Can Tony do that? Tony has a wrestling background. We haven't really seen it all that much lately. He likes to stand up and brawl, but if you look at the Michael Chandler fight, he looked pretty good leading up to that fight. I mean, he got kicked. That front kick would have knocked anybody out, but he looked fast. He looked quick. If that same Tony comes in here, it can be very interesting here. I like Tony. You know, he's really good offensive jiu-jitsu. Listen, I need a dog, though. I'm not a chalk boy. I need a dog. So Tony at this number, I like. I'm going to roll the dice thinking that he's there, but the Leech can knock him out. The Leech has big, big power. I like Tony. Give me Tony and add the submission to my card as well, which would be a nice little juicy number. So I think Tony by sub is the way to go here.
Ferguson by submission is the pick for Brian Petrie. And Kemp Flo probably eats that front kick, by the way, for the record. I do think
Kemp has never been knocked out. I mean, yeah, he does.
Never. So the Leech, no matter what happens in his career from here, what a tremendous body of work. One of the more prolific finishers in UFC welterweight history. And I would say relative to expectations, I think he's exceeded them in the eyes of a lot of people. Also happens to represent the home team, the Institute of Human Performance in Boca Raton, Florida. But I digress. All right, main event. Ken Flo will you didn't pick the co-main, did you?
No, yeah, he's gotta go.
Hey, I caught myself.
Hey John, is it cool if I go? Can I pick? Can I go?
Yeah, I'd like your thoughts on the co-main event, and I would just like to let you know at this point that you will lead us on the main event whenever we do get there.
Thank you very much.
Cody, put this episode on the demo reel. I think this is the one.
Hey, listen, I think Lee is he's a handful, man. I think he's going to be a hard guy to put away, and I absolutely agree with BP's assessment. It's like, Tony Ferguson is a better ground fighter than Li Jingliang. There's no question about it. The problem is, can he take him down? I don't think so. I think that we haven't seen a whole lot of Tony's offensive wrestling for a reason. Yes, he likes to stand up and trade, but I don't know. We don't see a whole lot of successful offensive wrestling takedowns from Tony Ferguson, and I see it being more unlikely going up a weight class at 170 pounds. So that's worrisome to me. I think Tony has a shot here. The problem is Tony's had a lot of tough fights. Tony, in his prime, wins this fight, in my opinion. I think he wins this fight. I hope he proves me wrong. But I think that the Leech, is still nasty. He's still hungry. I still think he's going to have way more knockout power than Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson's best shot is getting the leech tired round three, you know, just it being a bloody war, him then getting on top on the ground and getting some kind of TKO. I don't see it going down like that. I see them trading, but I see the leech, when he lands, it having much more of an impact. And at this stage of Tony Ferguson's career, I don't like that. So that's worrisome. I would love to be proven wrong. I think Tony has a tremendous amount of skills. He's given us some of the best fights in UFC history. Certainly one of the greatest lightweights in UFC history. But this one at welterweight, at this stage of his career against the leech, I don't love it. I'm going with the leech here.
All right, and that brings us to the main event at welterweight, third-ranked 170-pound contender, the undefeated Khamzat Chimaev, minus 1150, Nate Diaz plus 750. That number continues to bounce around. Diaz has gone from plus 675 to plus 700 just during this taping, but we're going plus 750 for the record. Chimaev, 11-0, had to work for it, certainly, though, Kenny, against Gilbert Burns. That was back in April at UFC 273. Now he draws the iconic Nathan Diaz, who has been on this roster since June of 2007 when he won season 5 of The Ultimate Fighter. Diaz Chimaev under the lights Saturday night. Ken Flo will be watching. Who do you have in the main event?
Khamzat Chimaev is a guy that is a tremendous wrestler. And wrestlers like that have traditionally given Nate Diaz trouble, right? This is not a surprising take. This is what a lot of people already know. Will Khamzat take him down and utilize his wrestling to win this fight? I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I think if he wanted to, we would have seen that against Gilbert Burns. And I saw a guy in Khamzat Chimaev who was not willing to exchange for very long on the ground with someone like Gilbert Burns. And obviously Gilbert Burns, world championship pedigree, jiu-jitsu, all that stuff. He's very dangerous. Nate Diaz off of his back is extremely dangerous as well. I think it was a good thing and a bad thing and what we saw with Khamzat Chimaev. Why? I think for Khamzat, hopefully you hope that he learned a lot from that fight against Gilbert Burns. And that he's going to learn to pace himself and not force knockouts and all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. But you did see a guy who didn't have a whole lot of experience. And I think that lack of experience is what caused him to struggle at times against guys like Gilbert Burns. Gilbert Burns, a tremendous fighter. But when we look at the potential of Khamzat Chimaev, and as far as taking the best path to victory, Khamzat decided not to do that. He chose a different path. We got an amazing fight because of it, a legendary fight because of it, but it was concerning to me. You are facing Nate Diaz, a guy who is, you know, maybe at the end of his career, but Leon Edwards, okay, if we're going to compare the technical striking of Leon Edwards to Khamzat Chimaev, who do you think is the more technical striker?
I would say Leon Edwards.
With no question about it. Who has more power? Khamzat Chimaev. I think that guy is a wrecking machine. He hits you. He could put you out. Can he put Nate Diaz out at this stage of career? It's possible. I'm going to say no, because we just don't see it. Not like that. And I also think the other path to victory when you beat someone like a Nate Diaz is leg kicks. Khamzat can fight out of the southpaw stance. If he's not using leg kicks to get in and get out, just expecting to overpower Nate Diaz and outbox Nate Diaz, I don't think that is the path. That is what we've seen from Khamzat. He overpowers you. He utilizes his boxing to take you out, knock you out. He gets you on the ground, and he overwhelms you with a TKO or something like that. From what I've seen, and yes, you know, the easy pick here, it's Khamzat Chimaev. But I see a whole lot of value here with Nate Diaz. Why? Because this is the last fight on his contract, supposedly. Okay. He ain't going out like a bitch. How much more value does he have, whether he's leaving or staying with the UFC and getting a win over a Khamzat Chimaev? He's been here before, right? There's no bigger fight than fighting Conor McGregor. There's no more people watching you than when you're fighting a Conor McGregor. This is not new to Nate Diaz. I still think he's got a whole lot of nasty in him. And if Khamzat faces him the way that he typically fights, if he fights him the way that he typically fights, I think that he may be in for a rude awakening. I really do. I'm a huge Khamzat Chimaev fan. I'm just a little nervous for him because he hasn't been in a lot of these spots. I think that, you know, people have a tendency to think, oh, I'm fighting Nate Diaz. And blah. The big knock on Nate Diaz is that he hasn't evolved, really. He's going to fight the same way and all that stuff. But if Khamzat fights him, I think that plays into Nate Diaz's game. And the easy pick is going with Khamzat Chimaev here. But at plus 750, I'm going with Nate Diaz. Fuck it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Give me all of those 3 minutes or whatever it was. That was a beautiful thing. No, that was a beautiful thing. I mean, you hit on so many things and things I have in my notes that now I'm not even going to get to. Quickly, Bri, on Diaz, right? Body of work. And no, Bri, you take as much damn time as you want. Like, this is hard to follow.
It's hard to follow.
Right. That's why we normally have you lead. No, I'm just kidding.
Right, right. No,
I'm
you're right.
To mix it up. No, dude, you're a legend. All right. Last win for Nate Diaz was August 2019 against Anthony Pettis. It has now been 14 months since he did go five rounds with the now champion Leon Edwards. That was UFC 263. And it's a whole nother story there that Leon's now the champion, given the way that fight went down. All told, the 27th and perhaps final UFC appearance for Nate Diaz. Ken Flo, pretty bullish on his chances. Your thoughts, BP? Yeah.
Well, the line's absurd for sure. I mean, Nate Diaz is an absolute G. He could easily win this multitude of ways, right? Khamzat's only had 11 fights. I mean, we all got to remember that. I mean, a lot of people are forgetting that. He's only 11 fights. And yeah, he's a beast, he's a stud, but that's still not a lot. I mean, that's still kind of borderline, you know, green in there. And no matter the way this outcome ends, Nate's going to win. I have friends of mine that are 2-9 Army or Die, and they consider what happened in that fifth round of Leon Edwards fight a win. Because you know what I mean? Like, he was getting dominated the whole fight, but hey, look what happened in the fifth round. So Nate can do no wrong. He's going to go outside the UFC if that is true, and he's going to do Nate Diaz things. He has an Army win or lose draw. It's kind of like Conor McGregor. Problem with this is I might get some shit. Kenny kind of mentioned it at 209. I think Nate has plateaued as a fighter. I think everything that he was really good at has kind of stayed the same or regressed a little bit. You know, his punching used to be really pity-pat mixed to the body. We don't really see that anymore. His last really vintage Nate Diaz performance was back in 2016. That's when he was 31 years old. He's 37 now. You know, he's not the most active guy in the world. I mean, his last win was Pettis, but the last time I thought he looked vintage Nate was the Conor McGregor 1 and 2. I thought he looked good in both fights. And I think his volume of punches are down. His takedown offense is non-existent. And his submission wins. Last time, 2016 over Conor McGregor. Time before that, 2012 over Jim Miller. It's been a while since he's really been on. But again, see who he's fighting. Leon Edwards took him down multiple times, I think five times. Didn't really want to play the guard game with him. I understand that. Chimaev's a star. He's next up. They're pushing that. This is what the UFC does with these new upcoming guys. I mean, it's kind of their blueprint. I really don't understand the backlash that people are giving this fight, saying like, oh, they're feeding Nate to the dogs. They should have. Nate is a dog himself. What are we talking about? He asked for this fight. There's no feeding to anybody. This is just what's up next. Kenny swayed me a little bit because I'm looking at this number and it fucking gets me excited. But I'm going to have to go the other way. I know it's an easy way out. I just really am high on Chimaev. I think what ultimately what's going to come down to, because Nate is no bitch and he's a fucking G, is he's going to get cut up. And it's going to get stopped. It's going to be a lot like the Masvidal fight. I can see that happening, but you're right. It throws me pause. I rewatched the Burns fight, and it looked like Chimaev didn't really want to do anything with Burns on the ground. He was a little hesitant to go to the ground with Burns. He tried a few takedowns and got stuffed, but mostly he wants to stand on the feet. He can take Nate down whenever he wants, you know, but is he going to want to play the guard game? How have we seen that? And the last time Nate fought a real 170 was Rory McDonald. Rory McDonald tossed him all over the cage. I know that was many years ago. But Khamzat Chimaev is big. And my boy Chris Curtis, who was trained with him, says he's the strongest guy he's ever trained with when he's in Vegas. He's like, these guys, he's different. Man. So with an undersized Nate going in there, I'm good to go with Chimaev. TKO round 3, probably doctor stoppage. But Kenny's right. The value, I think, is on Nate with that absurd number. And I think it's just going to keep getting higher once people get to Vegas this week. I'm going to be a square and go with Chimaev.
No, but hey, you're giving us a round and a method of victory without being prompted, which we like. So you get more from Brian Petrie on his MMA Takes podcast on social media at Brian Petrie MMA. I was excited for this main event before you guys gave me all the bells and whistles. Now I'm even more. And
I'm Jack now. With Ken. Now, Ken, I mean, I'm going to go run through my fucking wall after this, after Kenny's sermon he laid on me. I love it.
He doesn't pick underdogs for ratings. I'll tell you that.
I know. That's why he feels that. That's why I love that shit.
All right, BP. Appreciate your time. As always, we will talk to you in a week.
All right. I'll see you.
Brian Petrie with us for the main event challenge. Couple of happy birthdays here on my list before we get to the marrow seconds. I mean, Cody, pop your mug up anytime you want. Happy birthday to Connie Buffer, Bruce Buffer's mom, as we mentioned, celebrating birthday number 94. Happy birthday today to the General Saif Saud, and happy birthday to Clark Florian.
Aww,
still so much younger than her husband, Kenny, which is just amazing.
She really is.
Much younger than her husband. It's great. Good for you, dude. You got
massive dub. Massive dub.
Exactly. Huge win, you know? Fucking ratioing all of us. Cody, all with a blacked out background today.
Yeah.
What's going on, kid?
I'm on East Coast time. I don't have a mansion like Kenny.
Oh, that's right.
I'm just doing my best over here.
What's going on?
Features I do have.
What do you have for
baby
us, my
blues?
Man?
What do you got?
Well, so during that discussion with Ray, I found it interesting to go back and look at some Kenny Florian lightweight statistics. So I thought it was interesting. The all-time least strikes absorbed. Number one, Islam Makhachev, all-time in the lightweight division. Number two was Matt Serra. And number nine all-time was Kenny Florian. So pretty damn impressive Anakin Florian podcast list.
Yup.
Right there.
Yup.
So you'd love to see
tattoo forthcoming.
Well, and if there wasn't any dissension in the main event challenge, I was going to say, like, I'm not really incentivized to do this, but if Nate Diaz goes out and there wins, like, I'll get a 209 tattoo.
Yes!
100%. I'll fly down to Florida. We'll get it done.
Let's go.
Dude, so, that is amazing. I absolutely love it. And anybody who wants to join Cody or put any sort of tattoo bet on this at Anik Florian Pod, we're not giving away pay-per-view tickets this time around, but, if you want to get in on the tattoo bet, good for you, Cody. Where are you going to get that 209 tattoo when Nathan upsets the apple cat?
I'm going to get it like on the top of my barber pole, which I already got. So
where's that?
Oh, God.
I am a neck tattoo guy myself, but it doesn't work.
Well, you haven't even gotten your game bread tattoo. So if I go down there for the 209 tattoo, you got to get game bread, right?
Game bread. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, it's almost embarrassing the fact that I essentially came up with the new AF logo and more people have it tattooed on their bodies than our whole podcast. Yeah. So maybe I should start there. You know, maybe it's like an AF with a 209 and it on my titty or something.
I think that would
something
be great.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else do you have for us, young man?
So I thought something from UFC Paris was interesting. The Gomes versus Aarons fight was a majority decision with the last round being a 10-10 from Judge Christopher Chapuis. So Christopher Chapuis, if you want to come to America, like replace some of these fools that are giving out shitty scorecards. Like, we'll get you. We'll get you on a flight.
Was it warranted? I didn't see that fight, Cody, in your opinion.
Yeah, well, and I just think if we're going to have more liberal callings of the, you know, scorecards, then you got to have 10-10s in there too. There's got to be 10-8s. There's got to be 10-10s.
I agree with you, but that judge would get raked over the coals and lose all his work in the United States of America. Those judges are told to a man, to a woman, 10-10s don't exist except for technical circumstances. They don't exist. They basically put a pistol to your temple and say, pick a fucking winner.
Yeah.
You know, well, Rose landed one jab on Carla, give her the round.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
that's what they want. I'm just saying. I don't agree with
Get it. But is this the unified rules or is this the Mike Mazzulli rules of MMA? Like, I mean, the guy's got an opinion on everything. Like,
yeah.
So
that's interesting though. I didn't know that. Good intel from you there.
Yeah. So the last thing, because we got kind of a short week, you know, not too much, but NFL season, baby, we're back.
Let's
so we're back
go.
With the America's favorite segments, Cody's covers at the end of the show.
Or well, Cody's
so actually doesn't
not,
cover.
Not
yeah.
Covers.
So and usually that's the case. I miss by like half a point most of the time. But what I think would be funny based on what Ray said is if we, so you and I actually like watch the games, we take some pride in the fact that we can, you know, handicap these things. What if we just make Ray like bucket in a hat, pick a team every week, and then that's what he's got to do, and we'll see who has the better record at the end of the year. Maybe Ray picking random spread, like, almost like if you had a dog picking like out of dog bowls. So like, I think we should do that.
I wish we had done it for week one, but maybe you'll throw all the games in a hat.
There's time. We can do it.
All right. So what is your lock for Cody covers in week one?
So I'm going to Ken Flo's neck of the woods here. And hey, maybe Kenny can go and give us the inside scoop there. But I like Carolina -2.5 at home against Cleveland Browns. It's a revenge game for Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield going up against his own team, and who has more experience with the Browns defense than Baker Mayfield? He played against them all last year in practice.
Yep.
So I like that. Jacoby Brissett's the quarterback on the other side. Obviously, there's a huge discrepancy there. I love Jacoby, but it's not a starting quarterback in the NFL, not in this league. The Browns defense ranked 12th last year in the rush game, going up against Christian McCaffrey is obviously a big factor in this game. And Carolina was 8th in the rush. So the Browns are going to rest on their rush game a lot this year. Huge backfield with Nick Chubb. And the Panthers have a great rush defense, so I think it's going to be great for them. Home field advantage will give you 3 points. So you're telling me in a neutral field that the Browns should be minus half a point? No fucking way. Panthers minus 2.5.
Ooh, Cody, Panthers minus 2.5 with conviction in week one. That's good stuff. All right, anything else before we let you fly? All right, that's going to do it for our 364th episode. Once we do a show next week, there will be an episode for every day of a calendar year, which is super fucking exciting. So maybe we'll have a special guest. Maybe not. You'll have to tune in to find out. Don't forget, Anik and Florian Rewind exclusively on UFC Fight Pass, on which Ken Flo and I look back at a singular fight in UFC history. Remember the Show with Bilal Muhammad and my twin bro, Jason Anik, coming up this Thursday night on this very channel. If you want your AF merchandise, AnikFlorianPodcast.com. For the One More Sleep merchandise, go to millions.co and KennyFlorianMartialArts.com for all of your jiu-jitsu essentials. With that, for our producer, Cody Merrow, for Ray Longo, Brian Petrie, Ken Flo, and the rest, John Anik saying so long from Las Vegas, Nevada. We will see you live on pay-per-view Saturday night and next week for another edition of the yet-to-win-an-award Anik and Florian Podcast. Maybe someday. We'll see you next week. Hey, no! Next to you.